so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game? Yeah!
Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, tan, rested, and ready for this Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. I start with a very basic, how are you, sir?
I'm all right. I'm not tan. It's really cold in Berkeley. It's like a early winter Chicago day.
Can I preemptively boo-hoo whatever it is that you're about to say about the cold in Berkeley right now?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, I have to complain about the little things that are wrong in my life.
What is the temperature that qualifies as cold in Berkeley?
I bet it's probably like 45 right now.
Okay.
It's legit, like, shivery when you walk out your door. It's not real cold like real places have.
Is there snow on the ground right now?
Not yet.
Then
not
hush.
Yet, but I bet the mountains have a lot of snow right now.
Then hush, because you're behind me. In all seriousness, no. You know, I guess you do. You want to share? You have professional news you want to share?
Yeah. I wasn't sure how to do it. I thought maybe you'd be like, so you don't have a job. I don't have a job. I don't have much to say about it. I wrote a thing in my notes on my computer and photographed it and posted it on Twitter.
Other than the complete absence of, you know, my name in it, I thought it was really well done.
Well, I didn't mention anyone who had left the station, or I would have mentioned you and Bonte Hill and probably even like Tim Jeffries. Kate Scott, I did mention. So I guess I mentioned one person who left the station. My bad.
Is Kate Scott not with the station anymore?
Yeah, Kate moved on a few months ago.
Oh, man.
But in any event, for those of you who knew, my job was doing sports updates along with a host of other things at KNBR in San Francisco, and they got rid of sports updates. So with that decision, they effectively eliminated mine and another guy's job. And such is life in the radio business, is really just – that's really my position. You know, putting some other irons in the fire, and we'll see what happens. But it was an it was an awesome – more than 5 years, 5.5 years for me. You know, it was living the dream for me in many ways. Although, you know, so will the next thing be, I hope. And that's more or less it. I mean, I wrote a little bit about it on Twitter, but it's nothing interesting. It's just me saying thank you that's really it. The good news is I have a lot more time to focus on frivolous television and movie watching and listening to music and watching sports with a greater freedom and abandon than I did before.
Well,
so
I for one am excited about that for sure.
yeah.
You could do, in fact, probably someday I probably will do an entire podcast on just the challenges of being in the radio business. They're unique. For those of you who are listening and are not, one of those challenges is that this sort of thing is going to happen to you. Like no one spends a career in radio and doesn't get fired at some point. It's happened to me. It will probably happen again. I tell the layman it's kind of like managing a baseball team. You know, like there's one guy who stays with the same team for 25 years and retires and he's Bobby Cox or whatever. But like,
right. It doesn't really happen.
Even the best guys it happens to. And sometimes it's about things that are sort of bigger than you or beyond your control or whatever. So,
yeah. And I mean, look, in this case, as far as I was told and as far as I can, philosophically understand, it had very little, if anything, to do with me personally or my work, and I always got good response to the degree that I got response, nothing changed in my exit meeting. So I can't really do anything but take the company at its word and move on to the next thing. And I'm you know, I'm not crushed.
Yeah.
I'm fine. And in fact, to your point, I was speaking with Larry Kruger, who is still a host on KNBR, shortly after I was let go, and he told me something that an old radio guy by the name of Ron Barr told him, and not to necessarily say anything one way or the other about whether Ron Barr is a sage or not, just simply the line, you really are nobody in radio until you've been fired. So I'm trying to look at it that way.
It sounds trite, but it is 100% true that there, you know, some of those things that have happened to me have actually been the best things that could have happened to me. And like,
well, no, I mean, there look, and think the like, last
God,
time,
what if I was still in that job?
Ugh. Yep,
you know.
And
so,
and the last time I lost a job in radio was one of the best things that ever happened to me. Yeah. So yeah, that's really, you know, I feel like I've done enough over my career to show who I am, and I think I'll be okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, and past that, I'm very excited and texted you, I think it was 2 days ago, to say, well, look, I got a lot more time now, so, you know, tell me what I should fill yeah. my face
you're like,
with.
You're like, let's do a whole project. Let's throw it out there about stuff I should watch and listen to it. I'm like, that's totally unnecessary because you haven't watched The Americans. Get to work. So
and so I got to work and I watched season one, episode one of Los Americanos.
So this is one of those things. I feel like, and maybe you've done this for me. The show is like Breaking Bad. Like sometimes you talk to somebody and they haven't seen Breaking Bad. And I'm
that
like,
just happened to me yesterday.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm jealous
and I was like,
of you.
What the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah, that's the first thought is, what the hell's wrong with you? But then you're like kind of jealous because you know that they're going to get to like go on this ride for the first time. So I definitely have that feeling for you and this show, like, because you know I'll never be able to experience it again for the first time, and you're doing it now.
Can I just quickly? So just where because- are you? Quickly, before I get into that, can I give you an aside on your point about Breaking Bad and tell you how I came to discuss someone who had not seen
sure.
Breaking Bad last night?
Okay.
We were talking – a friend and I were talking about I don't even know how – we got to it, to be totally honest with you. Oh, right, because it was a totally – okay, this is such a weird – this is – I have a friend whose name is Mike, who is a wonderful, wonderful person who – and the kind of guy that like – he's friends with a few people, a couple of my other roommates as well. So he's at my house a fair bit, and he's the sort of guy that will stop by your room to like say hi, hey, what's up, man, just stopping by, and then like 45 minutes later down a rabbit hole of some weird conversation. You know, I'm sure everyone knows that sort of person. And so he came in and we started talking about Sam Rockwell because he had recently seen the movie Mr. Right, which is something we should probably talk about. If I can't remember if we did already.
We haven't because I haven't seen it.
You should see it. And we got into Sam Rockwell and then got into Moon. And my buddy Mike was like, wait, I feel like the guy who directed Moon also directed that crazy movie Brick. Do you know the movie Brick?
Yeah, yeah. I like Brick a lot.
Okay, he was wrong. It turns out the guy who directed Moon is Duncan Jones, who, fun trivia, is the son of David Jones, also known as David Bowie. But then we realized that and went to see, oh, well, then who was it that directed Brick? And we discovered, oh, it's Rian Johnson. And my friend was like, oh, wait, it's him. He's the guy who also directed another movie I really loved, and that turned out to be Looper.
He's Ryan making Johnson. A Star Wars, if I'm not
That's
mistaken.
That's exactly right. And so, and we were like, huh, I wonder what other things Rian Johnson did, because those are both cool things. He also did The Brothers Bloom, which I like. Nobody saw it, but I find it hugely entertaining. And the episode Ozymandias, three episodes of Breaking Bad, including the greatest episode of Breaking Bad, Ozymandias. And that is when he said, oh, I have not seen that because I have not watched Breaking Bad.
Yeah. And then you sort of want to tell people like they're wasting their lives. You know,
right?
Like, what are you doing?
And you know, well, especially because we had just been talking about like whether he was going to maybe start watching, what was it? Some other, you know, frivolous thing. Maybe I'll start watching whatever dumb show with my girlfriend. And it was like, wait a second, we were having that conversation, and you haven't seen Breaking Bad. Like, yeah. What is this? What are we doing here? And that is sort of the response you gave me when I was like, well, I'll watch anything. Tell me what to do. And it's like, let's have a whole segment where we fill my time. And you were like, no, let's not. Let's just have you watch The Americans like a responsible adult human being.
And some of that is completely selfish because there's a new season starting. And I literally had the thought as I saw the trailer. I'm like, oh, yes, The Americans. And then I was bummed that we weren't going to be able to talk about it on this podcast. So I did see an opportunity.
We still won't. Until I'm there, but hey, we can talk about old stuff.
You got a couple of weeks, so get to binging.
I mean, look, I'll get to work. It's four. Is it four seasons so far?
I believe it's
four
seasons.
Yeah, I got a shot.
It's not like there are a ton of episodes.
I am a strong-minded binger. Yeah. I do also have the thing where I got to get a job, but I'll have some time and I will dive in.
So
I only
quickly,
got to one episode last night.
I was going to say, so quickly, since we got on a giant tangent, your impressions of the series, one episode in.
Well, you know, how much do you know? I can tell you this. I got by total coincidence, a great introduction to the acting range of Matthew Rhys. When I was introduced to him Sunday in this week's episode of Girls, which I think we might do a minute on, but then seeing him in a totally different role was like, oh, wow, that guy's pretty damn good. In a very short amount of time, I learned this. And I already am in the bag for Kerry Russell. And it's a show that immediately in the first episode is well made, well acted. It establishes the stakes very clearly and interestingly. The characters sort of stake their ground and like, you know, I mean, it's one little story out of what's I'm sure going to be a huge, many threaded tale, but it's a very good foundation. I'm excited.
Yeah, I think, like I said, you're in for a ride. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I was watching Billions.
You are watching that. I was thinking about that one, too.
And I sort of realized that Showtime has a really great place for me, like in this peak TV era. Like, they are the home of middlebrow. You know what I mean? Where there's, like, there's a level of TV that's, like, you know, sort of cheap, fun TV. You know, for me, that's pretty much any reality programming I watch or whatever. And then there's, you know, there's, like, elite excellence TV, your Sunday night HBOs and Fargo. And for me, definitely The Americans is something in that category, aspiring for greatness TV. And then somewhere in the middle, I realize that, like, Showtime has been sort of constantly cranking out these shows that are very good, but, you know, maybe a little flawed. And, like,
it's
there's a whole bunch
that.
Of them. There's, like, Billions and there's The Affair. You know, they go on too long or whatever.
I watch almost none
Shameless,
of
them. You know, we talked about Roadies and what sort of like it's just kind of a fun, enjoyable, you know, Sunday night experience that was when it was on.
It's funny, you know,
they just
that's
roll them
true.
Out run after the other. Californication was like that for me.
Yeah,
the Don
okay.
Cheadle show we talked about kind of in the same way, right?
Yeah.
It's like it's the middle. And I'm grateful for it.
earlier on, I watched more of those because I did watch Californication. Obviously, Roadies we talked about. I never watched Homeland, though. That's Showtime, right?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't watch Homeland. But I think Homeland is that for a lot of people, though.
Was Newsroom
No, that was Showtime? HBO. That was HBO.
Oh.
Yeah.
I never watched any of the last couple you talked about either, Billions or any of the new stuff, really. Shameless. Besides Roadies, of course. And it's weird because I also love that mid-brow stuff. Like when we talked about Roadies, I think that was the main thing we both said is, yeah, like, it's just, there's nothing wrong with sitting down with a good time for an hour.
In fact, I think these days it's almost necessary. Like, you know, like, it's good to have something like that where you don't have to think too hard. You can just kind of enjoy it.
Yeah. I watch a lot of 30-minute comedy, though, and I think that's where the levity comes for me more often than not. But it's always sunny. Yeah. It's you know, I've been watching The Mick. I watch New Girl. Like, those are the things that I chill on.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people who watch network dramas, like if you're watching Scandal or The Good Wife or This Is Us or, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's even the endless number of Chicago series.
I got to tell you, I saw a couple episodes of This Is Us, and I am hard out.
Yeah, it's not my bag. But I think that's what people who are watching those shows get out of it. You know what I mean?
Maybe. That was one of the – I won't say it's the worst because, it wasn't bad per se, but that is one of – that is a show that people I respect said was like better than you would think, and I guess it was. I guess what I'm saying is
your bar was really low, right?
It's not even that. All the things to make that show better than I expected were in place, and I just hated it. Mm. You know what I mean? Like it was acted better than, and written better than, and conceived, but like all the it was better than I imagined that network version of that show to be, and yet it still is just. It's why I didn't bother. It's the exact reason I didn't bother seeing Manchester by the Sea, which, for the record, my mother was very displeased with the way I dismissed Manchester by the Sea. Just FYI.
She was not happy with you. I think you're missing out a little bit. You know what I mean?
Well, it's not even just that. It's that she felt that I unfairly, having not seen it, wrote off that it could possibly have been good. But that's kind of the point I'm making, is that is not what I was trying to
do. Yeah, I don't think you've written off that. I don't think your position is like Manchester by the Sea sad, therefore not good. Right?
No, my position, right. My position is much more, it's sad and about sad stuff that I've seen that, you know, a million movies have been made about. And so I just don't need it. Not that it's not perfectly good work by everyone involved.
I don't think you'd walk away from this going, I've seen this movie a million times. I don't.
Okay, but it's still, it's the setting and the themes, and you know what I mean? Like, again, a good movie feels original no matter what.
I mean, it's like Michelle Williams. Look at Michelle Williams' career, where she's basically made a career out of playing these super sad parts, but they're all very different. You know what I mean? Like, you don't feel like there goes Michelle Williams delivering the sad performance again.
You kind of do, don't you?
I don't personally.
I do. Maybe that's the problem.
I think her Brokeback Mountain sad is very different from her what was it? Blue Mountain sad. Was that movie with Ryan Gosling?
Blue Valentine
sad. Yeah, there you go.
Right. You know? But she's this is insulting, and I don't actually feel.
And she's like great I'm in this, not, by the way. She's great. She's not on the screen for, like, it's a true supporting role. She's great.
But she's like a great artist who paints exclusively in the color purple. Different shades of purple.
Well, just, I don't know about exclusively. She paints with a lot of purple. Let's say that. How's that?
Okay. Right.
The woman was on Dawson's Creek, by the way.
I was a Dawson's Creek kid. Don't, you know.
How did you not enjoy the hell of the fact that she took Busy Phillips to the Oscars? It was like little Dawson's Creek in like the third row.
apparently, because I didn't have a job and I could do what I want, I drove to LA just to watch the Oscars with my friend. And she works for Vulture, and so is very – well, just also she already was very keyed into pop culture stuff. And she I didn't inquire further because we were paying attention to the Oscars, but she said something that made it – that made me think that Michelle Williams has been bringing Busy Phillips to – lots of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're like best friends.
Right.
I don't think it was out of nowhere.
Right.
Although it was out of nowhere for me. It was like,
yeah,
whoa.
No, it was for me too.
I thought she was there with Affleck at first.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, how hilarious is that? And Jordan was like, oh, well, like, yeah, they've been – I just love that she's bringing Busy Phillips to everything or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I imagine she has been taking her to other award shows as her plus one.
There you go. So we should probably talk about the Oscars.
Yeah.
Because stuff happened. Should we just start with Best Picture?
Is there anything else?
Is there any? Yeah. I mean, I really kind of felt like – I mean, look, obviously that the snafu was the thing that everyone's going to talk about. But I felt like the show kind of did – a decent job overall, you know what I mean?
Yes, I would say it was exceedingly decent. I would say it was an unremarkable show in every way, except that most of the award recipients were at least pretty acceptable.
Yeah, and like, I mean, yeah, like a lot of our should wins did win, right?
Except Emma Stone should not have won. I mean, truly, if we dive into it, that's a travesty of an award.
Who should have got it in your mind? I don't remember. I know we talked about this in the last pod, but I don't remember who your should have in that category.
Natalie Portman, but honestly,
we both thought Viola Davis should win that category that she wasn't actually
exactly
in.
Exactly. Right. It should have been Viola Davis. If it wasn't going to be Viola Davis because she wasn't there, then it clearly should have, in my opinion, of the movies that I saw, clearly should have been what's her face? Natalie Portman for Jackie.
I have much less of a problem, I feel like, with that category than you did. I didn't see Jackie, as we talked about. But it just seemed like she, you know, like Emma Stone sort of towered over.
Hold on, I'm not done.
It was so pro forma that she was going to win, you know?
Well, yes, it was pro forma, but that's okay. That's everything that's wrong with the Oscars. Is Emma Stone still winning Best Actress when literally – now, I have not seen the other three movies, okay?
All right.
Natalie Portman was tremendous, but I am willing to virtually guarantee that in the performances, Emma Stone was the worst – of these five.
I don't, you know what, dude?
Listen.
That's really that's pretty tough if you haven't seen the other three. You know what I mean? To guarantee.
It's really not. I've read reviews of the other three. I know Meryl Streep's work. I've seen Isabelle Huppert before. I love Ruth Negga. And having read about their performances and seen Emma Stone's, I'm confident theirs were better in these roles. And I am one of the biggest Emma Stone fans you will find, but she was just fine in this.
Yeah, I see. All right, so I did see La La Land.
She was charming.
In between
she's her
the
usual.
I don't know, man.
You disagree with that?
I do.
You think this was a fantastic performance by Emma Stone? You think this was one of the better performances of her career?
Yeah, without a doubt, one of the better performances of her career. Yeah.
Wow, I so strongly disagree with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're pretty strongly divided on that one then. And I didn't really like La La Land. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about La La Land.
You liked that?
I thought she was the best thing in it by far. By far.
Why?
I thought that her performance was, yes, she had the usual charm, which is kind of the thing that she brings to everything. But I thought her performance was shaded and nuanced, and she did people are going to talk about the singing, but to me, like, the stuff that she did with her face, like in these audition scenes, was amazing. Or when she's watching Gosling perform, saying so much.
But that stuff was no more than what she does every time she's popped up on Saturday Night Live.
She's a very good actress. No, not on Saturday Night Live. Come on.
Yes.
All right. I can't go with you there.
Her performance in Birdman.
Does the movie work? She was great in Birdman. She was nominated for an Academy Award in Birdman.
Yes. Her in Easy A, in Crazy Stupid Love, in The Help, in all of these movies. She's in Zombieland. She's significantly better than she was in this movie.
You're going to tell me she's better in that? Aloha? Was that you're going to tell me she's better in that?
I didn't see Aloha, but just because Aloha is a worse movie than La La Land, which I'm sure it is, doesn't mean she wasn't just as good, if not better. There was nothing spectacular about the La La Land performance other than she's spectacular.
I mean, I could sit there and say that, like, Viola Davis's work in Fences isn't any different than her work in half a dozen other films. That's not a criticism of either of those things. Like, her work in Doubt is excellent. Her work in Fences is excellent. So, Emma Stone's a very good actress, and she was very good in this movie.
Emma Stone, there was nothing wrong with her performance. There was nothing wrong with it besides the fact that she's
the movie
not a
doesn't
great singer
work.
Or dancer.
It doesn't work without her performance. And look, as predisposed as I am to not like something like La La Land, like the fact that I can sit there and say, well, I enjoyed that experience is entirely dependent on her.
But what I'm saying to you is that it's dependent on her existing in the movie, not on some spectacular, heretofore unseen acting performance.
I don't know, I firmly disagree with that when
I sit down and watch even Crazy Stupid Love, which is not so different in terms of it's just her being her, like, there's more to me, there's more nuance, and she's funny in more interesting way. Like, I thought La La Land was so average in every way.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm in a very weird position of defending a movie I didn't really love that much.
I don't think you're saying anything different than I'm saying.
I thought she was great at it. Yeah, I just think we fundamentally disagree about the quality of her performance, and B, the quality of this performance relative to some of her others.
Okay,
but
well,
it is what it is.
Fair enough. Putting aside whether or not it was a great Emma Stone performance, it was certainly not as interesting or impressive as what Natalie Portman did in Jackie.
All right, the funny thing to me, about the Great Envelope mix-up. Was I was literally in the middle of tweeting out about how La La Land's win for Best Picture is going to look really silly.
Oh, I think I did.
When I found out they didn't win, yeah, and I was like, oh wait, no, the Academy did the right thing and picked the better movie. So,
so here's what's crazy. That mistake is like the only. Specifically that it went to La La Land and then to Moonlight is the only way that could have happened without a horrible, horrible disaster controversy. Like, can you imagine if they
had been the other way around?
A trophy from Barry Jenkins to give it to those guys?
Yeah, no, it would have been weird.
Who, by the way, those guys could not have handled it better given the circumstances, I don't think. I mean, they did not ask to essentially be trolled by the Academy.
The whole – I don't know. Did you rewind it and, like, watch – because I watched it a couple times. The whole thing is
six.
Amazing.
At least six. It's so amazing.
The third producer – who has already been told that they didn't win, and then gets on the mic and gives a speech anyway. That was a moment.
And Warren Beatty in the aftermath desperately trying to explain to people that, like, he's not just a doddering old fool. Yeah. That, like,
his story checks out, though, man, if you, like, when you watch it again.
And if you watch it, here's the part that I don't think is getting enough play.
That he throws Faye Dunaway under the bus to basically.
No, she did it. Crazy old Faye Dunaway. Look, Warren Beatty literally he's looking all around to try to find
he
someone.
He goes to the envelope like three times, right? He's like, he keeps looking in there for another piece of paper.
Exactly. Yeah. He looks past Faye Dunaway off the side of the stage and kind of leans toward her as if to show her, look, something is wrong with the card. And she just grabs it and reads it.
Yes.
Like, before anyone could, like, so fast, before he can even be like, yo, something is wrong with this card, she's like, La La Land. It's such an incredible scene. It's so weird that somehow it's both weird that it happened and also weird that it's never happened. You know what I mean?
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, although to me, as a manager, it's one of those things that reminds you of, like, you have to be detail-oriented down to just the most basic people, that a tiny mistake, you know what I mean, can sink – you know what I mean? Can derail an entire evening, you know what I mean? And someone not double-checking the envelope they hand to a person – you know, creates a thing that people will talk about forever. Can I just – the one thing that kind of bugs me in the aftermath of this is the tut-tutting from the – it's a shame Moonlight's, like, not getting their moment people. Like,
I don't know if it's a shame. I mean, it's kind of a bummer, but it's not a big – it's not like, look, they're going to – it's still a ton of attention.
Yeah. This movie's made for $1.5 million or whatever, $5 million. It's the best picture. It's now in 1,500 screens. They'll never be able to take that away from them. It is a real moment. And for people to be resentful of this thing – that was, you know, I mean, I guess it was somebody's fault, but it was just a random occurrence, and that people from the other movie handled really gracefully. And for them to, like, well, I can't believe we're talking about, you know, the white people handled it gracefully while the black gay film isn't getting its full. It's like, it's just a thing that happened. Like, nobody tried to shut out the moment for Moonlight. Like, you know what
no,
I mean? Like,
it's one person who probably is getting fired who works for PricewaterhouseCooper that handed someone a bad envelope.
It would have been nice if it went down a different way, but this is the way that it went down, and this was also nice, so let's just enjoy this, you know?
Okay. So I actually said to the TV screen while it was happening, like, oh, man, it's kind of crazy. Moonlight doesn't really have the, like, you won the Oscar moment, you know? But it's – and in a way, that's a bummer. But if we're talking about, like, getting what you deserve, this might create more attention than if it had just won the Best Picture Oscar without this bizarre fanfare.
And to me, it worked out great because almost everybody standing on that stage for La La Land – already had an Oscar that night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
Giselle
Oscars
got all
his,
around. Yeah.
Emma Stone
Everything
got hers.
Fine.
All the songs got theirs. Like, it was, you know, and a worthy movie got honored, and I'm happy for it. And I thought, you know, for the most part, like, the show was pretty great, you know? As those shows go, it was less larded down with the Aren't the Movies Great stuff that tends to be in there every year. Not that there wasn't none, but...
Yeah, this was another thing, my mom... More insight from my mom for today's podcast. There was none of the, like, host singing and dancing in the movie thing just to, like, entertain you stuff. And, like, Jimmy Kimmel... who was also, by the way, scandalized at the end of the show. It was so – you could tell was just so upset with the way it was ending. But he was, like, funny. and his bits hit, and I will never not love the Matt Damon.
The Matt Damon stuff,
I don't
was
know why.
Amazing.
It's just the best.
It was amazing. When he does the We Bought a Zoo thing.
Oh man,
so great.
That was so funny. And
Ben Affleck in Guest was like fantastic.
I lost it. I'm not sure I've laughed like harder out loud at an Oscar thing than Ben Affleck and Guest.
Yeah.
And it's just a very simple it still makes me laugh out loud. Like, come on, Ben Affleck and Guest. Yeah. Like, anyway, I liked Jimmy Kimmel, but it was a very unremarkable Oscars, and it was weird that somehow it also became just an incredibly long Oscars, because it did feel like there was less nonsense, and yet it was like over 4 hours. Which I feel like is long even for the Oscars.
Well, look, you're going to give technical awards. You're going to have speeches. You know what I mean? Like, it's just that's what it is. It's a four-hour show. And it's one of those things. There's the bit where they're dropping the cookies and the donuts and stuff. You can tell that everyone in that place is so hungry, like that they're legitimately excited for these food items falling from the sky.
Oh, yeah. That was fun, too. Like, rich celebrities like diving over each other after junior mints. That was like
there might have been a near riot in there if they had dropped like double doubles from the from those parachutes. Double doubles.
I don't know if I can continue to do this podcast before eating.
Speaking of which, we sort of talked about this in our pre-show conversation and didn't bring it up today. Have you seen the Ringer's top 50 fast food items article this week?
Yes.
Oh, I have some issues. I can almost do an emergency pod on that entire article.
I mean, obviously I have the time, so just let me know. Okay. But it's a travesty.
I mean, look, everyone's going to have their individual favorites. I somehow found – Chick-fil-A had like four of the top 13 and somehow felt they got shortchanged. So.
Well, that's because the stuff that's up there is inane. Number one. I need to know what, like
– There's the voting process is described in there. It's fairly
not
informal.
Well enough.
Yeah.
A two-step vote, first establishing more than 100 nominees, then holding a general election. But what does that mean? How did you vote? Is it just one vote? Did you rank all of these things
in order? Did
you
want to see people's public ballot? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. I need to know how waffle fries from Chick-fil-A could possibly be number one on any fast food. Like, I don't care who – you know what? That sounds to me like it got a bunch of third-place votes. You know what I mean?
Look, waffle fries from Chick-fil-A are great. And I'm not here to down waffle fries from Chick-fil-A. And I could even – if you want to go, okay, they're the number one fry thing, fine. I'm with that.
Fine.
However, if you get a Chick-fil-A combo – the waffle fries are not the thing you're most excited about eating that day. You're thinking about
Here,
the sandwich.
Let me tell you something. Here's what happens. You go to Chick-fil-A, right? You order your like two sandwiches and a fries and a drink. Okay. Maybe one spicy. All right. You grab that bag. You're on your way to an event.
Oh, I know exactly what you're saying. You have to eat those fries right away or they don't keep well.
No, that's not even what I'm saying. No, I'm not downing the fries. Yeah. This is not even about the fries. Here's what I'm saying. You're in your car. You and your buddies get some stuff. You drive away. You open the bag. They forgot one of your waffle fries. You're like, damn. And then you split the waffle fries with your buddy if he's nice enough.
That's
to
true.
Share.
You're not going back. That's an excellent point.
If they forgot your chicken sandwich, you got to turn around and go back for the chicken sandwich.
Now let me turn this around because McDonald's fries did very well.
And I'm not a fan, but that's just me.
I do feel like, conversely, and this says something about the other food items in your McDonald's order for sure, but like. The fries are the thing you are most excited about in your McDonald's order. And if you went to the drive-thru at McDonald's and they forgot your fries, you are going back.
I think that's probably true for most people, though I am not a McDonald's fries guy. I'm a Burger King fry guy.
Oh, yeah, that's unfortunate.
I'm one of those. It's funny. I listened to the Bill Simmons podcast about this and found out that he, too, is a Burger King fry guy, and I'm not sure I know any others.
So where do you stand on the
Burger King fries, they changed them. I understand. Like 1999 or something.
Yeah, I don't know. It's always like. You know, it's like Pepsi trying to catch up to Coke Classic. You know what I mean? They're always changing them.
Not for me. No, they made like a fundamental shift.
Some people like Pepsi too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm probably just the Pepsi guy here, but yeah. I have a defense. You know what I mean? I'm sure Pepsi guy has a defense too. I shouldn't sell him short.
I will grant you that they have improved. The Burger King fries have certainly improved over the years. I will grant you that. Where do you stand on the In-N-Out, Shake Shack. Yeah, I don't know if there's anybody else in that mix burger placement. I felt like the Double Double was honestly should have been a little higher.
The Double Double was number two, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? Oh, maybe I'm thinking wrong. Okay, then no, that's
here's
fair.
No. I think I know what you're talking about because here's the problem. Anyone?
Oh, Five Guys was the one I forgot in that mix. Sorry.
Five Guys was further down.
Yeah.
Anyone who gets a double-double and does not get it animal style is like either, you know, just doesn't know or is like just not right in the head.
All right. Well, I'm apparently not right in the head because I
you don't get animal style.
Yeah, it's very simple for me. I don't do their sauce because I'm not a mayonnaise person. It's got mayonnaise in it.
Okay. Interesting.
So yeah. So no.
I mean, it's Thousand Island.
But Thousand Island is a mayonnaise base. So you know, grilled onions, I'm down with. But yeah, I don't do animal style. What
do you order them?
I often do. Depends on my mood and time and such.
Okay. Because here's the thing, animal style is just the right way to order the burger. I can understand like you have your particular concerns, but animal style is clearly the way to go as far as I'm concerned.
Animal style was a separate item in this list, right? There was further down.
My point. If it's going to be a separate item, if it's going to be its own thing, it should be the thing that is in the top five.
Well, see now,
as
you
opposed to the regular double.
To me, that I could, you know, obviously, my stance here is now out there, but I would have been very angry if that had been the case.
Really?
Yeah, very angry.
Well, maybe they should have. Then maybe the answer is they should have the double double where
I think should have just all been one double double. I think and been like animal style optional. Because to me, part of the greatness of the double double is your ability to customize it. In these kind of various ways, and you know, people can do what they want.
For me, I would like to look. I understand people drawing a line. The bacon cheeseburger at Five Guys is number 10.
It finished ahead of Shake Shack, right?
The Shack burger is 18.
Yeah, I mean the Shack burger is way better than the Five Guys burger to me.
So I'm not I don't believe I have ever been to Shake Shack in my life. I have been to Steak and Shake and
it's very different.
I know that. Okay. And the fact that the steak burger is even on this list is an offense. I also like if you're going to have the double double and the double double animal style, I don't know why the cheeseburger at In-N-Out has to have its own entry. Like there are just things like that that I don't feel like this list was really done well.
Look, it's obviously a vote and there's going to be contradictions. It's like a college football poll. You know what I mean? Like you can if you go through the top 25, you're going to find, well, this team beat that team, but they're ahead of, you know.
But you think they should have just combined like
I do?
The burgers at In-N-Out are one thing.
Here are my contradictions, though. And I, you know, the main one to me is I don't see how you can have the Jack in the Box crappy taco above the Taco Bell crappy taco.
Yeah, that's insane. And by the way, I also if you're going to rank fast food burgers, you can't put the Whopper at 46. I'm sorry.
Oh, see, you're just a Burger King stan.
I it's not even that. It's like the Big Mac and the Whopper. They both got to be top 25. I'm sorry.
See, I just go back to my Coke and Pepsi comment right there. You know what I mean?
It is. If you're going to rank the top 50 colas, Coke and Pepsi are in the top five. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. Like, you may not love Pepsi, but Coke and Pepsi are the standards of cola in this country.
I also don't think – I mean, to me, the Quarter Pounder with cheese is the iconic McDonald's burger.
Okay, fine. The Big Mac, make it the Quarter Pounder with cheese, although I think the Big Mac has more cachet. That's not even the point. Just like Quarter Pounder with cheese – like the iconic McDonald's burger, the iconic Burger King burger are they're fundamental to this list. They have to be.
Yeah, they on the list.
They, like, you can't have four different entries for you know what I'm saying? You can't have Big Mac is 16. That's fair to me. The Whopper should be in the range of the Big Mac. That's what I'm saying to you. There's nothing that puts the Big Mac above the Whopper.
Where are you at Popeye's chicken at number four? Because I just don't see how you can have Popeye's chicken above the Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich. Like, directly above.
It's interesting. I think the spicy chicken sandwich at Chick-fil-A should have gotten more love.
I mean, it was like 12 or something like that. Like, it's pretty
You know what
strong.
It is? The chicken, I don't know that I've ever had. I've only been to Chick-fil-A like 5 times.
Okay. And you never just had the basic chicken sandwich?
I've had the basic and the spicy.
Okay.
And I've had the waffle fries.
Have you had the nuggets? Because the nuggets are also pretty amazing. But really,
no, I have not. That's what I was just going to say. I don't think I've had the nuggets.
Yeah, the nuggets are that's worth doing one time. I mean, you know what you're getting. It's just little mini versions of the sandwich. But the dipping sauces are excellent.
I started going very occasionally when Obama legalized gay marriage because I felt like it was
you felt like you won the war.
Yeah, but now I don't think I can go anymore.
Because it may become illegal again?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, the fight is back on.
I see. I'm not sure that fight is back on.
Just wait.
But yeah, you know, I'm not going to rule it out. Certainly not going to rule it out. All right. Well,
in any event, this list, like, I just feel like it, like, okay. You got – I understand you're at an airport. You grab an Auntie Anne's pretzel every now and then, okay? But for that to be top 20 along with two tacos for 99 cents from Jack in the Box
– that would
– while things like, you know, let's see. The Egg McMuffin is 32, you know? Taco Bell is – really pretty disrespected on this list, I think.
I don't know. Like, I know there's a cult of Jack in the Box taco
thing.
People.
Let me throw something
it
at
has
you.
American
Sorry.
Cheese on it, for God's sakes. Like, no one who is not like weaponized levels of high or intoxicated enjoys the 2 for 99 cent Jack in the Box taco, right?
Correct. I mean, just a weird thing. And then here's another thing. Like,
now, granted, look, the Taco
like
Bell
this,
taco
right?
is a little bit the same. That's kind of when you want to eat it. But that's the thing you want to eat, right?
Yeah.
I was like,
and
oh.
I feel like this – I feel like what happened here was like quirks of a numerical voting system where what needed to happen was an NFL Hall of Fame style get in a room and hammer it out discussion. Because here's another thing. Like, again, someone should have ironed out the In-N-Out problem.
I
want to
know who's the Terrell Owens of this discussion.
No, here's the point. You don't need three different In-N-Out burgers on this list. You just don't. You can represent the In-N-Out burger. You know what I'm saying? And it should be well represented. It's a great fast food burger. And it's very affordable, by the way, for its quality of ingredients. But a thing like this, a Krispy Kreme glazed donut.
Where was that on the list?
What?
Where was that on the list, by the way?
It's 40.
Okay.
And if you're going to put it on the list, it's top 10. Period. End of story.
Yeah, that's weird. I agree with you. That's weird.
A Krispy Kreme donut is crack.
Yeah, like who doesn't prefer a Krispy Kreme donut to two Jack in the Box tacos?
I mean,
or certainly, actually, you know, the best thing is like
I would
no
fight
one.
You.
Yeah, like look, I do like an Auntie Anne's pretzel. Like if I'm in the mall and
sure.
I see one, I'm like, ooh, pretzel, good.
But
there's
it's like
no
a
way.
It's not-
yeah, there's no way that you take like if there's an Auntie Anne's and a Krispy Kreme next to each other.
Oh my God!
Like one has
You're
a giant line
donuts.
And one has two people at it. Like so, yeah. All right, that's weird.
It's insane, is what it is. Yeah. Like literally,
like a taco with American cheese.
Dude, we used to drive 20 minutes in college to go to the big old Krispy Kreme place where you can get hot donuts at like midnight. Like Krispy Kreme, I'm not. It's crack. If you're at the office, we worked at the same place for a long time, and not infrequently, boxes filled with Krispy Kreme donuts would show up.
I'm getting excited
and
just thinking about it.
And I defy anyone to have less than two. And like if no one's watching you, you will stand there and just keep eating them.
Yes, that's correct. And occasionally I have looked around and then just gone for some more.
A. I mean, it is absolutely the crack of, if you're going to call it fast food, it has to be top 10. I like, it's just, it's easy. That's an easy decision.
Yeah.
And it's a weird, like, here's something weird, right? Why are the Blizzard, Frosty, and McFlurry all three in a row, 7, 8, and 9?
Yeah, those are too high.
Are any of them really that good?
I'm a stand for the Blizzard. And I think okay. the other two are a little bit of knockoffs. But I'm
like
fine
a Frosty. Frosty, I would not say is a knockoff.
Well, yeah,
it's its own thing.
It's its own thing, and it was first. Knockoff is the wrong word. The McFlurry is an obvious knockoff of the Blizzard,
yes.
However.
The McFlurry is nothing more than McDonald's version of the Blizzard. And it's below the Blizzard. But like it seems like someone made a decision that, oh, we'll just group these together. Or else it was another weird quirk of like numerical voting. But there's no way – like again, you're in a strip mall. On one end is a Dairy Queen. On the other end is Krispy Kreme. Like, man, yeah. I guess you might be in a Blizzard mood, but like,
yeah, it's a
Krispy
little bit.
Kreme
yeah, it's
is,
a little bit of a different thing because right, there are times when you know it you know it's a hot day or whatever, and like
sure,
that ice cream's gonna hit the
spot.
You want
an ice cream?
You know
right.
what I mean? Yeah. So and look,
I just think from an objective standpoint, you're gonna like. If it would A, it would be super weird, but also you wouldn't necessarily have a Blizzard every morning if they showed up at your office.
Yeah.
But
and
you're
by the
having
way,
a Krispy Kreme every morning.
If you got Shake Shack on there, like a Shake Shack milkshake, I enjoy a Blizzard. A Blizzard is great, but give me a Shake Shack milkshake over a Blizzard any day. Like it's
right.
That's
a Blizzard
that's
is
a
like
real
an elaborate
product.
Dessert.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So I don't know. I got to go. Particularly because I'm hungry now. I did also want to mention a side article on that site because they're doing food all week about the revival of Domino's, which I just found to be the most confounding thing I've ever read on The Ringer.
Interesting. I will ride for new Domino's.
It's like 4,000 words on how great the Domino's experience is, and I like
great
like,
is probably
what?
Strong, but I do think it's
this person lives in New York and orders Domino's.
That's weird.
New York City.
Like Manhattan?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Like, that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, if you're going, well, this is versus Papa John's, okay, fine. But, like, this
yeah,
versus
that's
the
what I'm saying.
This versus
I
the pizza in your town? Come on. You know, like, there is a better pizza place in your town, wherever your town is. I know in your town, and certainly in my town, than the Domino's.
Honestly, like, there are better pizza places, certainly. But I'm not going to tell you, like, if I'm ordering, if it's, like, watching the game, getting a quick, cheap pizza, I think Domino's at this point would probably be my go-to over Papa John's and Pizza Hut. And
correct.
That
okay,
was,
that's fine.
But that was. But here's the thing. That was absolutely not the case like 5 years ago.
Right. Look,
like
if the
five
article
years
was,
ago and forever before that, Domino's yeah. was the absolute bottom.
Hey, if the article was they fixed the sauce and the crust and it's fun to watch the tracker on your, you know, and the website's really good. Like,
yeah.
Okay, fine. You know what I mean?
Oh, but that's
like,
not what it is?
But it goes way beyond that, in my humble opinion. And that's what...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's
what... I'll read it, because
me.
I'm... You just described me with the first thing, just there. That's how I feel about Domino's. Like, they fix the crust, the sauce is better, it feels like the ingredients are not pulled out of a trash can somewhere, and, like, it's really affordable and quick.
Yeah, I hear you.
which is all of a sudden even more appealing to me.
All right. So, you know, we missed a bunch of things, but real quick, do we got some homework that we want to hit, right? Besides, you know, if you haven't seen The Americans, you should start watching that. There's a new season starting.
Yeah. And we're probably going to like spoil large swaths of The Americans over time, I'm imagining. So people should be ready. I want people to check out a hip hop album by an artist named Loyal Carner, LOYLE space CARNER. He's a British rapper.
Okay.
And
I'm intrigued by this because I had a friend of mine tweet out the other day, like, why are British rappers getting ignored? And the thought of my head was because like most of them are terrible. So there's a thing happening that I'm not aware of.
This guy's album is called Yesterday's Gone. And I like when you can hear a British accent in a British rapper. Like you can really hear the accent, but also understand what the F he's saying and like still feel that some British rappers to me, well, you know what, a lot of British rap is kind of garage rappy where it's a little more like oddly rhythmic. So this stuff is very, the beats are very like 90s sample heavy. Although I don't know that any of it's actually sampled. I think they're mostly played musically, essentially played samples. But it has that very sort of 90s soul swing feel to the beats. And I think he's a really talented rapper who's also distinctly British, which is kind of fun.
Yeah. You know, the last British rapper I liked was the Streets. So it's been a minute.
But that's what
Streets
I mean.
Were great,
Streets were great. He was that garage rap style where it was like a lot of weird rhythmic stuff and like his accent was awesome, but also occasionally unintelligible. Loyal Carner is much more like he would have been. He's at home in the realm of like, you know, the Reasonable Doubt era Jay-Z of like. Like that's the kind of tune and flow style it is. You can tell he's a kid that grew up on that stuff. You know what I mean? But he has his own sort of British twist on it. I think it's a really good album. I have more hope for this album that you may enjoy it than anything I've recommended in a while.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm not going to give
even
you anything
like
else.
Like outcasty, sort of, not quite the Southern flavor, obviously, but like that.
Yeah, I got
like
it. I'm thinking let me listen to it. You know? We'll talk about it.
I'm excited about it.
All right. I can tell. All right. I'm not going to give you anything else because I want you to watch The Americans. And I don't want you to lose your focus because there's a lot of that. And we'll convene back on all those things next week. Shout outs to Girls and Crashing. We touched a little bit on Girls because they were both really great this week. And
Girls was so good. Lena Dunham is really like people need to get over their hangups because she's one of our most talented makers of visual art.
No one is making television like that. You know what I mean?
No one's making visual media like that. She's she's excellent.
Good stuff.
Get on board.
All right, I gotta get out of here. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The lights out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.